Hello, this is Rita Schulte, and I will be reading excerpts from the Bloomington Pantograph from Saturday, March 6th, Sunday, March 7th, and Monday, March 8th. We'll begin this half hour with readings from Saturday, March 6th, page 1A. The headline reads, Pandemic's Bite. Dental care rebounding. Dentists join vaccine effort. It's almost business as usual. Despite dental practices grinding to a halt nearly a year ago after a spike in COVID-19 cases and mitigation efforts, recent surveys from the American Dental Association show practices have been able to report 80% of previous patient volume, indicating that, for the most part, the coronavirus isn't driving patients away. That seems to be the case in Bloomington Normal, according to what some local providers told the Pantograph. Our business right now, as of February, is back to pre-COVID levels, and we attribute that to our existing patient base, Bloomington Dental's Dr. Stacy Van Skoyuk said, that's spelled S-C-O-Y-O-C. We've also had an influx of new patients again. It's not a huge amount, but we are still getting new patients. Van Soyuk and her husband have jointly practiced in the area for nearly 30 years. Their longevity as a practice, she said, may play a part in how loyal patients feel to the office. But, she said, they also hadn't seen much resistance from patients about returning after COVID restrictions on dental offices were lifted on May 11th. That being said, there are a small percentage of our patients who are choosing to avoid coming into their dental office, and because that's how they're living their lives during COVID, Van Skoyuk said, they plan to return when COVID is over, whatever that definition is for them. In the meantime, Van Skoyuk said her office has deployed telehealth screenings and transitioned to having patients wait in their cars for appointments instead of sitting in waiting rooms together. At McLean County Dental Office manager Tracy Cotton said that according to a recent report, he ran for his office only about 12% of the office patient base was putting treatment for effective services like cleaning. A lot of patients were pretty comfortable with our policies and protocols at the restart, he said. We were always very cautious and very safe, so we didn't change a lot of our stuff going into the restart. Most dental practices have invested in filtration systems, whether they're portable or they're actually installed new filtration systems in their building to help reduce the spread of aerosols. Dentists can't force reluctant patients to return to their offices, but they do strongly recommend it. Otherwise, they say seemingly unrelated medical conditions can be worsened by lack of dental hygiene. You do have a degree of the population that's just not going to come back, even though they should, Illinois State Dental Society Governmental Affairs Director Dave Marsh said. But oral health care is essential care, and without it, you're going to have a higher degree of decay and a higher degree of peritonitis, and also you're going to have infections that will cause long-lasting impact on the patient's health. Marsh said the ISDS regularly focuses on promoting oral health as oral health care, that is, as essential health care. In a sense, that's one messaging pattern that stayed consistent in the dental industry despite COVID-19. While the coronavirus might not have meant radical transition in dental office practices, it has, in one way, pushed some dentists out of the office. Van Soyuk is one of a handful of people in McLean County who's turned her training in giving shots as a dentist into volunteer work at vaccine clinics. It's part of a statewide effort to secure volunteers to deliver COVID-19 vaccines, which dentists are primed to do via training they already have and use on a regular basis. To participate, ISDS requires a mandatory hour-long training session online, which Van Soyek said was followed up by on-site training at Grossinger Motors Arena in Bloomington. On Thursday, Van Soyek estimated she'd given around a dozen shots by the end of her shift. "I'm really excited to be doing this," she said. ISDS estimates around 800 dental professionals in the state have taken the online training so far. In McLean County, a local group of dental professionals will take the online training en masse on Tuesday. Also from Saturday's paper, on page A2, $400,000 theft leads to prison term. Woman embezzled from Bloomington Normal nonprofit she once headed. The former national president of a Bloomington-based nonprofit organization was sentenced to more than 2 years in prison for stealing money from the charity. Carol Babbitt, 61, now of Asheville, North Carolina, was national president of Project Linus from 2000 to 2016, when its headquarters were in Bloomington. The nonprofit provides handmade blankets for children who are ill, traumatized, or in need. She pleaded guilty before her sentencing to 5 counts of mail fraud, 8 counts of wire fraud, and 5 counts, of money laundering, as she controlled the organization's bank account and used its credit cards for personal use. Beginning in 2010, Babbitt ultimately stole more than $400,000 and spent it on clothing, electronics, pet grooming, furniture, sporting event tickets, and personal travel. She also falsely categorized credit card payments used with the charity's funds as business expenses and filed false personal tax returns with the state of Illinois. Babbitt was ordered to begin her 30-month sentence on May 11th in the Federal Bureau of Prisons. She was also ordered to pay Project Linus $410,250 and the Illinois Department of Revenue $7,800 in restitution. And from Saturday's paper, page A3, the headline reads, Unit 5 opens online sign-up. Families with kids set for kindergarten directed to website. Kindergarten registration is underway in McLean County Unit 5 schools, but this year the process has gone viral, or virtual rather. Unit 5 families with children starting kindergarten in August have been instructed to visit the district website at unit5.org to begin the registration process. Their registration steps will depend on their student. For example, a student who is part of our early learning program will follow the directions that are listed on the website because they're already in Infinite Campus, said Superintendent Kristen Weichel. Whereas a student who is brand new to Unit 5 will need to contact their school or the school they think they'll attend for instructions on how to proceed. Families without internet access can call the school they believe their child will attend in the fall to receive assistance. If a parent is unsure which school their child will attend, they can always call the district office and we'll help direct them to the right building, Weichel said. Like most school changes in the last 12 months, Weichel said registration has gone digital to limit physical interaction during the pandemic. In normal years, she said, a lot of times schools will have a big day or two when incoming kindergartners can come in and see the building, complete paperwork, their parents can learn some information about kindergarten, and just get some questions answered. Unfortunately, we are not able to do that this year due to COVID. Families can find kindergarten registration forms under the Student and Parent tab on the district website. They will also find videos and PowerPoints from the elementary schools giving some extra information about the schools, their culture, just making the process a little more special for families. Weichel said the district administration will work with the buildings to see if kindergartners and other new students will be able to do a walkthrough before August. Registration at Unit 5 is open now until the end of March, and families are encouraged to complete the process as soon as possible. We want to make sure that we have enough staff and classrooms set up for all of our incoming kindergartners, so the sooner the parents can complete the registration, the better, Weichel said. In the neighboring district, Bloomington District 87 is planning to open kindergarten registration to families on April 5th, also going viral this year. Bloomington families can begin the process next month by going to district87.org/registration. Assistant Superintendent Diane Wolf said schools will hold orientations in the fall for kindergarten students and families. District 87 will also be holding D87 Family University Transition Series on April 15th. Video links will be posted online for students new to Sarah E. Raymond School of Early Education, kindergarten, 6th and 9th grades. Also from page A3, the headline reads, Lawmakers Reopen Kids' Museums. Pritzker told such facilities in crisis they can run safely. Three Illinois lawmakers are urging Governor Pritzker to modify Restore Illinois guidelines to allow children's museums to reopen. The ultimate reality is that these children's museums are an outlet for children and families who are struggling to navigate remote learning. They're struggling to keep their children engaged in educational-type activities, State Senator Jason Berrickman, Republican of Bloomington, told the Pantograph. A children's museum believes it can operate in a manner that is safe and consistent with what some of their peer organizations are doing across the country. The Pantograph this week wrote about ongoing financial institutions facing children's museums statewide. The institutions also can't get certain federal COVID financial aid because the money is limited to museums and venues with fixed seating. Many children's museums don't have that. Berrickman, Senator Dave Kohler, Democrat of Peoria, and Assistant Majority Leader Kelly Burke, Democrat of Evergreen Park, in the letter said they want the governor to find a safe way for the state's 17 children's museums and 10 science centers to begin operations. The institutions have had various restrictions for about a year because of the pandemic. Children's museums across Illinois are facing an economic crisis right now, the letter reads. These facilities serve hundreds of communities and school districts, as well as millions of families. A request for commitment about the letter, for comment rather, about the letter, was not returned by Pritzker's office. Current Phase 4 guidelines outlined in the State Restore Illinois COVID-19 Response Plan allows museums to reopen at 25% capacity, but hands-on exhibits must remain closed or modified. The Children's Discovery Museum, 101 East Buford Street in Normal, lost $800,000 in admissions, field trips, memberships, rentals, and other revenue, and laid off 40 employees, said Director Beth Wissman. We are relieved that our lawmakers are helping children's museums find a path forward, she said. The Children's Museum in Oak Lawn and the Kidseum of Health and Science in Springfield also pushed for the state to provide better guidelines last year. The group with the Association of Children's Museums drafted guidelines to present to the Restore Illinois team, but requests were unsuccessful. Berrickman, Kohler, and Burke wrote that while children's museums are unable to reopen under Phase 4 guidelines, other indoor recreation with a similar high-touch activities like bowling alleys, gyms, and gaming facilities can operate at 50% capacity. This policy does not seem consistent and could be seen as unfairly targeting museums, which were widely recognized as industry leaders in cleaning protocols before the pandemic, the letter reads. Wisman said children's museums, although unlikely to reopen immediately if guidelines change, are hoping to put their action plans in place to continue serving the community. She said, "We hope the governor is able to serve our museums and families by helping us find a path forward with the DCEO's Restore Illinois plan." And from page A6, the headline reads, "Vermilion County may widen shot eligibility. Date for people with comorbidities may be moved forward." McLean County could move to an expanded Phase 1B vaccine stage sooner than originally planned. That's the hope anyway, McLean County Health Department Administrator Jessica McKnight said on Friday. Original projections put April as the estimated date for people with certain comorbidities to become eligible for the vaccine. Now, as roughly 50% of people eligible under Phase 1A and 1B have received at least one shot, McKnight said officials are hopeful the county can move into the expanded phase sooner, although an exact date hasn't been nailed down. The Illinois Department of Public Health on Friday reported more than 39,000 doses of vaccine administered in McLean County, with around 14,000 people having received both shots. And while public health officials estimated the state would receive 83,000 doses of the one-shot Johnson & Johnson vaccine earlier this week, McLean County likely won't see any for weeks. According to IDPH, the majority of the doses sent to Illinois were distributed to mass vaccination sites like those in Springfield or the Metro East area near St. Louis. "Right now, we are not receiving any J&J vaccine that I'm aware of," McKnight said. "I think it might be several weeks before we will get it in the county, although obviously it would be great to be proven wrong." About 2,900 doses of either Pfizer or Moderna are slated to be shipped to the county next week. Now from Sunday's paper, page A1, "Boil order lapse faulted. Neighborhood not told of main leak, main break, and precautions to take." Kari Young typically doesn't give much thought about washing her hands, soap, water, scrub, rinse, then dry. But late last month, before making her lunch, that cycle was interrupted when Young lifted the kitchen sink faucet. It made a sputtering noise and the water didn't come out. "My first thought was that I forgot to pay my water bill, or that it didn't go through the city shutdown and the city shut off my water," said Young, 26. "But I checked and it did go through, so something wasn't right." Young, along with at least 18 residents living in a neighborhood of about 130 households on Bloomington's southeast side, didn't know that city water crews had shut off the supply of water to their homes, running from Pierce Avenue to South Mercer Avenue and East Lincoln Street, as they worked to fix a burst water main running under Mayflower Avenue. They also didn't know that when the water started flowing again, they should boil it for at least 5 minutes before using. The city's Public Works Department didn't post mandatory boil order notices on the doors of all residents affected by the water shutoff, according to interviews and a review of documents obtained by the Pantograph. "My understanding is that there was a problem of the notices getting delivered," Department Director Kevin Koth told the Pantograph. "The notice that should have been delivered that afternoon wasn't delivered until the next day." The department conducted an internal investigation into the events that unfolded between February 23rd and February 25th, Koth said. "We're still trying to get to the bottom of things, where they broke down," Koth said. "This error, it shouldn't have happened, but it did. We're trying to figure out why and how to prevent it from happening again." City Manager Tim Gleason, in a statement emailed Friday afternoon, said the situation was an unfortunate and preventable incident. "The department's investigation," Gleason wrote, "determined that discipline was recommended for the crew leader and a formal policy is being developed to prevent this from ever occurring again. The residents of Bloomington receive high-quality service the overwhelming majority of the time, but there are those instances that we fall short, and this was one of those that should never occur again," Gleason wrote. Residents say they're left with a sense of doubt over the water's quality and whether it's safe for consumption. It wasn't the fact that we didn't have water. That happens. It's understandable, Young said. But what we weren't updated on it and that we were left in the dark and there was no validation, that's the issue. When the water came out of her bathroom sink's faucet as a tiny trickle, then went away on the afternoon of February 23rd, Diane Troher, who lives two doors down from Young, texted her neighbor asking if she was experiencing the same problem. Young had already been fielding similar texts from other neighbors confronted with the same issue. Both women called the city. After redirects and holes, representatives told both the water in their neighborhood had been shut off, a boil order was in place, and a notice should have been posted on their front door. There was no notice on my door, no email, no phone call. I called the city three times and was told the same thing. Young said, I didn't even see a public works truck on my street. Young and Troher were also told that the water should be flowing again by the end of the day and that they would receive another notice when the boil order was lifted. Neither of those notices came. By Tuesday evening, the water had returned, but not in its familiar form. It was brown and gross, Troher said. We didn't use it at all. The situation largely hadn't changed by Wednesday morning. No one heard from the city, and doors remained bare of any notices. Every online outlet I tried was dark, Young said. We didn't know if we should drink the water, if we should boil the water. It was a gamble. Either you keep it off or turn it on, boil it, take the risk of it still being contaminated. Troller, who had washed her dishes Wednesday with bottled water, attempted the latter. I boiled the water, and it still looked as nasty as can be, Troller said, describing how a white substance formed in a ring around the pot she used. I didn't know the sequence. I just boiled it, and it still looked really bad. When Young called the city at 4 p.m. to speak with the water department, she was told the water superintendent had left for the day. Troller said she found nothing on the city's website or social media pages declaring the order lifted. We're pretty savvy. We know how to navigate the internet, said Troller, who's over 65, but there was no communication. If you can't notify one way, you can do it another way. We understand these things happen, but darn it, communicate with us. Young reached the city superintendent of water distribution by phone on Thursday, February 25th, 2 days after she and her neighbors learned they were without water and under a boil order, but had no physical notice. The pantograph is not identifying the superintendent because the extent of his involvement in the situation is not clear. When approached to comment for the story, the superintendent declined through his city-issued email address. He said he understood, but that our street wasn't even part of the boil order, Young said, of their conversation. I was like, no, I didn't have water coming out of my faucet. When I turned it on, it was sludge. She said he told her the boil order was lifted Tuesday afternoon and notices were sent out. But Young disputed that and asked why she and her neighbors did not receive a notice posted on their doors. She said he eventually acknowledged dropping the ball. At the core of the miscommunication between the city and the residents are boil order notices, which Cothsed's crews are supposed to hand deliver to each resident affected by a water repair or shutoff. A boil order is done as a matter of precaution, he said, and crews will take water samples to a lab for testing. Once results show the water is safe to consume, the boil order is lifted. Typically, the process is initiated and concluded the same day of the repair, he said. We tape it on the front door when it's issued, then deliver another when it's lifted, Coates said. But that appears not to have happened here. The pantograph reviewed notices that Young said she and her partner received through email on Thursday, February 25th, 2 days after she learned she was without water and under a boil order, but had no physical notice. The first was received by her partner at 8:09 a.m. that day, but dated February 23rd, 2 days earlier. It was addressed to water customers in the 2200 block of Pierce Avenue and the 800 block of Mayflower Avenue and Reeds. Repairs are underway, and we anticipate that service will be restored this afternoon, Friday, February 23rd, 2021. The date in the notice was incorrect, as that Friday was February 26th. A second notice declaring the boil order was lifted arrived in Young's email at 1:11 p.m. the same day after she asked the water superintendent during their phone conversation to send it, she said. That notice is dated the same day it was received, February 25th, and is addressed to customers in the same area. It reads, "Repairs are completed and the necessary flushing and purification verification steps have also been completed. Whether and when those notices were emailed to others in the neighborhood isn't clear. Coates said he couldn't speak to that question, but that there was a breakdown internally. The pantograph has filed requests through the Freedom of Information Act for other documents related to the notices distribution. A week after having their water back on, Young and Troller are still skeptical when they open their faucets. Both have showered in the water, but they still boil it before cooking and are drinking bottled water. I mean, it's a human right. It's a resource you shouldn't have to think twice about, Young said. Coates said he understands the residents' frustration and anxiety, but at this point in time, they shouldn't have any continuing concerns over the safety of the water's use. The water has been tested and confirmed as suitable for consumption by an independent laboratory, he said. Our goal is to provide safe drinking water to all the residents of Bloomington, Coates said. Nonetheless, Trollers still can't shake the questions about what could have happened over the 3 days to her or her boyfriend. His immune system isn't normal, Troller said of her boyfriend. It's compromised, and he has health issues. If he had been drinking that water and we didn't know to boil it, I don't know what would have happened. It could have been devastating. She said she's not looking for an apology from the city. She just hopes those responsible for maintaining and communicating about the city's water supply have learned a lesson. I trust people until I decide they can't be trusted, Troller said. We don't take it lightly. You just cannot take that lightly. This is your water. You always assume it's safe, unless told otherwise. But when you're not told at all, that's unforgivable. Young said she also doesn't require reconciliation. She just wants a more reliable and effective communication system. It seemed like the arm and the leg were moving in two different directions, Young said. If we hadn't called in and pushed for information, none of us would have known that we couldn't use our water. We were just left in the dark. This has been Rita Schulte with the first half hour of excerpts from the Bloomington Pantograph for Saturday, March 6th, Sunday, March 7th, and Monday, March 8th. I will return with the second half hour in just a few moments. Please stand by.